want to thank my brother very, very much for agreeing to speak to us today. As you know, as I mentioned before, whenever a gadol passes away, I think it's critical for us to have an appreciation, chayitin alibo, of exactly what we lost, you know, the chorban beis elokeinu that we suffered. And it happens to be that Rav Natan Greenblatt was one of the gedolim of America, even though he didn't look like it, he was one of the gedolim of America. I personally had no real relationship with him, but my entire relationship with him is through hearing stories from my brother about all of his many, many interactions with Rav Natan. So as Rav Ezra Schwartz pointed out, stam, it's a good idea for the Y'smicha guys to know my brother, but aside from that, it's a great opportunity to hear from someone who is actually very close, to hear a little bit about Rav Natan. So thank you, Rav Avi.
Thank you, Rav Arye. Could you give me a time to stop? You told me Minchas at 2:30, but you probably have to get to Mincha, right?
Yeah, we got to go downstairs, so, I don't know, 2:25?
25? Okay, great. It takes 5 minutes to walk downstairs.
Hachanus, you got to
go. I want to thank my brother for giving me this opportunity because it's really something I wanted to do and I'm probably going to do at other times as well, to be able to speak about someone who I considered my Rebbe. And I have to begin by saying that I didn't have enough time to really organize things the way I would like to. So I'm going to share with you kind of random thoughts and hopefully over time we'll be able to turn it into something that makes more sense. But this is... He just passed away on Friday, and this is kind of just random thoughts that have come into my head since that point. You know, I consider Rav Natan to be my Rebbe. My relationship with him was never that of a formal Rebbe. You know, when you have a Rebbe, you have my brother who is your Rebbe and teaching you halacha and helping you in your learning. You have people in the yeshiva, or Willig, or Shef, different people who you may consider your Rebbe. That wasn't the kind of relationship I had with Rav Natan, because I wasn't connected with him in the younger part of my life. I didn't know him until I was close to 30 years old. I was mostly finished Shas by then, so he wasn't helping me get a Deres of Halimut or anything of that type. Yet, I completely considered him my Rebbe. To the point where on Friday when I heard that he passed away, his son called me and told me that he just passed away about an hour before, I tore Kriya because I really felt this was not together just a together Chacham Shemes, it was really together Rabo Shemes. I really did consider him my Rebbe. You know, when trying to organize my thoughts, my wife pointed out to me, my whole family really knew Rav Natan pretty well because he would come by quite often and he would stay in my house, and so we've seen him in all different kind of settings and kind of more casual settings as well. So my wife pointed out to me that Rav Natan didn't just teach me how to write a get, how to be Masader a get. That's what he was known for. I don't know what your familiarity is, but he was primarily known for running all over the place, literally all over America, particularly in the southern part of America, particularly in places where they don't have Masadre Gittin, and he would do a get. He would go for one get. He would go for five Gittin. It didn't matter. It was extremely important to him to make sure that a woman who needed a get would receive a get at any cost, and the cost was his own cost. He would fly himself. Of course, he would charge for the get, but often he was losing money in just how he would get there. But anyway, he didn't just teach me how to write a get. He didn't just teach me how to be Masadre get or all the things that go along with that. But in a certain sense, I really feel that Rav Natan molded my adult life. He didn't teach me how to learn. He didn't give me a derech halimud. I was never in his shiur formally. Of course, when he came through, I had him give shiur at the kollel, but I was never formally in his shiur. And I was almost 30 years old before I even met him for the first time. But I still feel that he very deeply molded my life and the life of my family. Much of what I consider to be important, much of what I consider what I personally give chashivas to, I got from my Rebbe Rav Natan Greenblatt. I remember once when I had to, most of the time when I do gittin, I do it locally, just very locally, and I can't say I'm in any way following in his footsteps or traveling all over the place doing gittin. It's not really what I do, but for the few times that I did travel to like kind of faraway places getting in a car, driving a few hours to someplace in Chowchilla, California, where there was a husband over there who refused to come anywhere in any kind of semblance of a Jewish community to do a minoy on a get, to appoint someone to write the get, the eidim, to sign the get. So I remember we took two eidim in a car, we drove all the way, it was hours and hours away, I don't remember how far it was. We met in some Starbucks, he was willing to give us 15 minutes or something like that in some Starbucks. He didn't buy us coffee, I remember that too. And he was willing to meet for 15 minutes. So when I told Rav Nata, I just got back from Chowchilla, California, which I never heard of, so for sure you never heard of, and got a minoy on a get to be able to send this woman a get. You know, he heard that, and then he called me back a couple of days later. He said, I want you to know when you told me that, I got so much nachas. I told him I went to Nevada to do a get, different places, which are, you know, these are not crazy places. I did nowhere near the kind of travel, but he felt like, at least, you know, he felt like he passed on that level of chashivas, the importance of that get didn't matter, get didn't make a difference, and really it is our job, our obligation to make sure that people receive the get when they need it. Rav Nata really went to the end of the world to do get, and it wasn't just traveling a few hours. He would go to the end of the world to do Gittin, and he didn't focus on his career, he didn't focus on his, like, building his repertoire or anything like that. His entire focus was on helping Klal Yisrael, and really that's what he did. But you know what? There's much more to it than that. I can't say that what I learned from Rav Nata is how to do it, how to do Gittin, or what I learned from Rav Nata is the value that Gittin have. My wife reminded me also that, you know, Rav Nata instilled in us such a value that shaped our adult life in such a significant way, not from what he said, and not from, we didn't call him up and ask etzas or have serious conversations, just from the way he behaved and what he was able to achieve, what he was able to accomplish. You know, every time I thought to myself, I've been living out of town for 20 years, and every time I thought to myself, I need to get back. I need to get back to a mainstream community, New York, New Jersey. You know, something more normal. Because how are you going to do anything? How are you going to accomplish anything being so far out of it, being so far out of town? But really, Rav Nata was our inspiration. He spent 72 years, from when he was 24 years old till he was 95, 94, whatever it was. He died at 96. So the last year or two, he was living in Lawrence. But basically, he spent 72 years in Memphis, Tennessee. When he went to Memphis, Tennessee, it wasn't the Memphis, Tennessee of today. It was the Memphis, Tennessee of 72 years ago. There was nothing. It was Mamish HaMidbar. There was nothing there. And what Rav Nata taught me really is that you could become a Talmud Chacham living out of town. You could contribute to Klal Yisrael living out of town. You could make an impression on Klal Yisrael much, in certain ways, much more than you could even living in town. And you know, I'm not saying that I modeled him. I'm not saying that I followed in his footsteps. But for the choices that I made in my personal life, I really owe Rav Nata a tremendous debt of gratitude, because there's no one else I could have spoken to, or no one else I could have gotten that inspiration to. Every time I thought to myself, I've been out of town for just too long. It's only been 20 years. He's been out of town for 72 years. So yeah. It really gave me a tremendous inspiration. And aside from just the inspiration, you know, when you live in a place that's not kind of mainstream, where you have certain people assigned to do kashrus, certain people assigned to do eruvin, certain people assigned to do gittin, certain people assigned to do mikvos, certain people assigned to do whatever it may be, you know, out of town is just different. You're like a veterinarian instead of a doctor. You got to figure out how to do everything. Because there's just not other, there aren't necessarily other people who are able to step in and do it, and it's very hard, and there are challenges. There's major challenges that come up, and I was never able to ask questions to people who can't relate, because if people can't relate to the challenges you're going through, my family was not from out of town, no one from my family, on my side, my wife's side, everyone was kind of basically mainstream, kind of in town. And to relate to the challenges that we had, whether it would be chinuch challenges or political challenges or dealing with the conservative and things of that sort, it was always Rav Nata. Do we build a mitzvah? I remember they wanted me to help build a mitzvah in the JCC somewhere in Los Gatos, it's called. And I don't know, what am I going to build this mikvah for? So that the conservatives could use it for a geirus, and they could have a kosher geirus. It's not going to be a kosher geirus anyway. What's the point of making a kosher mikvah? Once in a blue moon, maybe Anita will use it. Maybe. You know, if she manages to keep her Zion and Kiyam by some miracle, is there really a point to building a mikvah in such a place? The mikvah is off the swimming pool in a JCC in Los Gatos. So who do you ask this question to? I mean, who could relate to such a question? So I remember calling Rav Nata, and he said, "Of course you should build the mikvah. Of course you should be the Rav HaMachshir on that mikvah, and you should constantly be involved with that mikvah. Why?" And he said, "The reason why is because they have to know that only we build mikvahs. No one else could build mikvahs. Otherwise, you have mikvahs all across America. They're going to be built by conservatives. They're going to be built by reformed people. They're not going to be mikvahs. They're not going to be kosher mikvahs." So he was, you know, it was a question that I felt like I can only ask him, because no one else is going to relate to that challenge. No one else is going to relate to the circumstance. One of the most prominent aspects of my Rebbe Rav Nata is that he was not a well-known person. He was not well-known to the yeshiva students. He was not well-known to most Rabbanim even. But to the people who lived in places that they didn't have access to this Rav for this kind of issue, and that Rav for that kind of issue, and another Rav for a different kind of issue, or someone... people who lived, you know, across America knew Rav Nata very well. When they needed an Erev, they knew who to call. When they needed a mitzvah, they knew who to call. When they had kashrus questions, they knew who to call. And of course, for Gittin, they knew who to call as well. He was very familiar. He was very well known to the Dayanim in Eretz Yisrael, and he had relationships with all of them. You know, when he sent a patur, a get to Eretz Yisrael, there was no questions asked. He had his own style. He had his own ways of doing things, but no one ever challenged him, because everyone knew that in America, if Rav Nata is doing a get, then the get is being done properly. For years, he's been telling me he had no colleagues. He had no friends anymore, because he Baruch Hashem, was zochet Arich HaSiyamim. He was zochet tremendous Arich HaSiyamim. Not just Arich HaSiyamim Vishonim, but an Arich HaSiyamim where there was quality to his life. He was running around still at the age of 92 years old, 93 years old. He was still running around from place to place. I remember once, and he was above 90. I told him, I had a question, his hearing wasn't so good. I said, "Hello, Rav Nata, I don't hear you." I said, "Rav Nata, it's Avi Leibovitz." I tried to say it slowly. "I don't hear you. Who is this? Who is this?" He asked me five times who this is. And finally, I say, "It's Avi Leibovitz." So he says, "I'm driving on a highway right now. Let me pull over." I said, "How about I call you back?" "When do you pull over on the highway?" Anyway, he never stopped. He lived a life into his 90s, well into his 90s, traveling all over the place, leaving, you know, his son said at the Levaya yesterday, he grew up knowing that his father left the house on Sunday morning and didn't come back till Thursday night. That he was away. He was away the whole week. He would go for kashrus, he would go for gittin from place to place to place, always multi-destinations. He was never just going there and coming home, going there and coming home. It was always from place to place to place. I was at a chasana there when Rav Herschel Schechter's daughter married Rav Feldman's daughter, Rav Feldman's son, in Palo Alto. So it happened to be at the chasana Rav Nata came, because Rav Nata was very close to Rav Feldman. And Rav Asher Weiss was there, because Rav Asher Weiss was there to be mechaved Rav Herschel. And I said, you know, this is an opportunity. I should really introduce them. I should introduce Rav Nata to Rav Asher Weiss. I thought that was a good idea. You know, sometimes what you think is a good idea is not necessarily a good idea, but I thought it was a good idea. So, you know, I thought maybe Rav Asher is much younger. He's 25 years younger. I thought maybe he would have heard of Rav Nata. Rav Nata was very well known among Dayanim, and I'm sure Rav Asher's brother would have heard of Rav Nata, because he's a Dayan and involved in Gittin. But anyway, so I thought it was a good idea. So I take Rav Nata. I say, "Come, you gotta meet Rav Asher Weiss." Come over to Rav Asher Weiss. I said, "This is Rav Nata Greenblatt. He was, you know, he's a Talmud of Moshe Feinstein. He's been a Rav in Memphis for whatever the number was, 60-something years, 65, 68, whatever the number was, 65, 68 years. And he really is the Rav of the South in America. And Rav Nata is a very unassuming, he barely had a beard, he wore like a straw hat sometimes, like a brownish suit. He looked like, you know, someone who did not look like a classic Talmud Chacham. So Rav Asher clearly wasn't so sure why I was bringing him over, so he assumed it was obviously that he needed a bracha. So Rav Asher gave him a bracha, that he should be matzliach for many years to come. And Rav Nata, 25 years older than Rav Asher, wasn't offended by him giving a bracha. He just said, "I always use a bracha." You know, that's the way he was. He was a very humble person. But in truth, he was really an ish ha'eshkolos. He was an ish shehakol bo, like the Mishnah says in Sota about Yosef ben Yehuda, Yosef ben Yochanan, and Ish Yerushalayim. An ish ha'eshkolos means that there was nothing he couldn't do. There was nothing he didn't do. He didn't just sit and learn. That's not the way he was. He didn't just sit in an office or in a study and learn all day. He was busy with Klal Yisrael. He was inside the Gittin. He was a mohel. He was a shofet. He ran the OU's shechita facility for a while. He went to different communities building Erevin. He built many mikvos. When you needed a chalitza in a community that had a bezdin, I'm sure they were able to handle it. But a community that didn't have a bezdin, you call Rav Nata. Rav Nata saw hundreds of chalitzas by Rav Moshe Feinstein because he was there after the war and seeing many, many chalitzas. And Rav Nata probably did more chalitzas than anyone else in the United States. Who knows? He had shoes, different sizes of shoes. He was completely competent in doing chalitza. I remember when he once came to this area to do a chalitza. You know, I've seen Rav Nata do gittin hundreds of times. But a chalitza, this is the first time I ever saw him do a chalitza. When he did a get, he didn't need any papers, he didn't need any madrich, he didn't need anything to follow. It just rolled right off his tongue. Everything you have to say, everything you have to do. When he wrote the get is not standard. Every get is written a little differently. You got to squeeze it onto 12 lines, different names, different lengths of cities. Rav Nata didn't use papers. He didn't print anything out. There was nothing that he was copying from. It was all in his head, cheshbonning out what has to go in each line, and that's the way he wrote it again. But that was normal for me. I saw that hundreds of times. But to do a chalitza without a piece of paper in front of you, to do the kriya of the chalitza, I mean, you'd get a little nervous, without a chumash, you know, lo ava yagni, you know, kacha, you know, all these different, just, you say this, now you do this, not a madrich, nothing in front of him, no kind of seder chalitza in front of him, that I felt was really significant, because how many people could do that? Even if you're going to do a chalitza, you follow something, you follow some kind of seder. He had it all in his head. He was involved in Dinei Torah, but primarily he was a Lamdin. He wasn't just a Bucky, he wasn't just someone who knew Shas, he was a Lamdin. He was someone who learned in order to understand. Rabbi Heinemann in his Hesped yesterday for Rav Nata said that Rav Nata was a Bucky in Dalit Chalkei Shulchan Aruch and Shas, but the way he learned was not Bikiyos. That wasn't his style. His style was really very much Lamdis. His style was every time he gave a shiur, he considered his Rebbe to be Rav Michal Feinstein. He learned by Rav Michal Feinstein for a year, maybe a little bit more, because then they both went back to MDJ. But it was kind of that kind of Brisker Lamda style. When he spent a year in Boston, and he considered that year to be one of the greatest years of his life. He spent a year in Boston when he was in his teens. That was before Rav Yosher Berg came to YU. So him and Rav Michal Feinstein together, they weren't cousins yet, they were going to be cousins. They had a kol in Boston, and Rav Nata told me very often that was an unbelievable year for him. That year was kind of molded him into becoming in his Derech HaLimud. And he considered Rav Yosher Berg, which I don't know if he maintained a relationship with, and Rav Michal Feinstein to be his Rabbeim, he considered them both to be Gaonei Olam and Rabbeim for the rest of his life, always marveling about their gaonos. So what he was really cared about passionately was Limud HaTorah. That's really what he did. That's what he did with his time. There are many people who finished Shas. There are many people who finished Shas, I'm sure, as many times as Rav Nata Greenblatt finished Shas. That's not what made him stand out. But I can tell you, there's probably no one in the world who finished Shas in the airport as many times as Rav Nata Greenblatt, because he was never home. He was always traveling. you know, I don't know about you, when I travel, it's just hard to learn. You get distracted with things. It's hard. It's hard to learn on the plane. It's hard to learn in the airport. Not him. He didn't matter. He had to go to the airport. He said, take me to the airport early. I don't care. I'll sit in the airport. He could sit in the airport for an hour. He could sit in the airport for 4 hours. It didn't make a difference to him. He has his little Gemara with him, and he was fine. He didn't eat anything more than that. When he went to Memphis, Tennessee, there was nothing there. He literally built a community. I remember him telling me many times that a community that has a day school will be able to produce B'nai Torah. Without a day school, you have nothing. And that's what he did. The first thing that he worked on was creating a day school in Memphis. He has a sefer Kerea Chasada. That's the name of the sefer. It's a sefer on Chumash. I once said to him, Ragata, why a sefer on Chumash? You know, it's not a sefer. I thought at first it would be a sefer of Jerush of some sort. Why a sefer on Chumash? He said, what's wrong with learning Chumash? You know, so he wrote the sefer on Chumash. But I always look at the sefer to try to find something interesting to say. I've never found anything interesting to say. You know, my son sometimes say about a certain. I said, what did the Rebbe say in the Shiur? It's not say overable. You know. I don't know if there's an expression like that. So Rav Natan Sefer is not something you could use in your drasha, because either he's finding a word that the Ibn Ezra teaches one way and the Rashbam has another way and showing ticks of different places where the word is too technical, or it's some aracha on kachim, or some kind of sugya that is way too involved. It's not really a sefer of Jerusha on Chumash. He loved kachim. He was very involved in kachim in his own personal learning. I remember every time he came and I asked him to give a shiur in the kollel, it would be on the ketores or the makom hamizbeach or karban tamid, always things like that. He always wanted to be a Rosh Hashiva. I think that's true, but he never became a Rosh Hashiva, and I don't know if he would necessarily have been a very good Rosh Hashiva either, but he managed to achieve a tremendous amount in what he put his kolos into, and really did something that no one else was able to do. Every time he would come to town, which was about every 6 to 8 weeks or so over a course of many, many years, he would stay in my house, and he would always be very, he knew how to talk to people. He didn't just speak to me. He spoke to my wife. He spoke to the kids. He spoke to everybody. He was a real gentleman. He knew how to speak to people. He always complimented how the mikios in the house, how clean it is. He tells me he stays over in so many places, and it's not necessarily so clean. And he really appreciated the fact that even with little kids in the house, things were put away. Things weren't all over the place. I visited him in Memphis when he got older, and I noticed the same thing. The reason I think he appreciated the cleanliness is his house was no different. Not his study. His study was a mess, but his house was no different. And it's not because he did any cleaning, I guarantee you that. Whenever he came, he barely ate. He didn't eat anything. He asked for a soft-boiled egg. Anyone had to make a soft-boiled egg? How long do you make a soft-boiled egg for? I don't know. But he asked for a soft-boiled egg, and that's what he would eat. I remember once he asked for a soft-boiled egg. I told my wife, could you make a soft-boiled egg? And I knew she would go and take 3 eggs. You know, there's a thing of that women have to take 3 eggs because just in case there's a blood spot in one of the eggs, so then it's like bottle, whatever it is. And we don't have this anymore nowadays because we don't have fertilized eggs around, so there's no concern. But I knew this would be a pet peeve of his. So I said after my wife put the 3 eggs into the pot, I said to her, not to go look at the pot. And he goes to the pot and he says, 3 eggs? I asked for 1 egg. He starts screaming, why 3 eggs? What are you doing with the other 2 eggs? You know. Truth is, I'm not going to eat it. I'm not eating soft-boiled eggs. All my kids knew Rav Natan very well also, because he would stay in the house. We didn't have a separate guest room. We had a guest room, not a separate bathroom. So he was basically sharing a bathroom with my kids as they were growing up. I remember my daughter coming out one morning and asking why there's teeth in the Netilas Yadayim cup. Where else are you going to put your teeth overnight? So, whatever. Use a different cup in the TLC Yadayim, I don't know. So you know, he would come out. He would come out in his pajamas. He was a very unassuming person. He would come out in his pajamas, and on the way to the bathroom, on the way back to the bathroom, and still arguing about a Rambam, talking and learning. I remember once he comes. Coming from out of the bathroom on his way to sleep, very tired. But we would do sometimes 5 or 6 kitten a day, because we let it build up, and we do like 5 or 6 kitten. It didn't take about 2 hours each, and it was just like an exhausting day. And then it was 11, 12 o'clock. We'd come out, and he would always point out something, a Rambam. the fact that he's wearing his pajamas and screaming about a Rambam didn't faze him. I remember once talking about asking a kasha on a tshuva. Rav Moshe has a tshuva where he's mati or yichud with a mother and a daughter. What's a pshat? That doesn't make so much sense, because in pashas a yichud with a mother and daughter is not allowed. Rav Moshe has such a tshuva. Rav Nata was asking what's a pshat in such a thing, and we're trying to figure it out. I remember once asking Rav Nata, we have to wrap it up. I can go on for a very long time, but I remember once asking him, who is the greatest person you ever met? Because he really was a person who was Mashamesh Gedolei Olam. He was a Talmud of Moshe Feinstein, Feinstein, he spoke and learning with the Briska Rav, he had connections to all the Gedolim of the generation, or Yashaber, all the Gedolim of the generation. So I said, who's the greatest person you ever met? Trying to think who he would consider to, whether it was literally the greatest, I don't know, but someone who really stood out in his mind. So he said to me, when I was young, I was ill, and my father brought me to Rav Kook. He said he was ill, he was sick, and it sounds like he was very sick. He said Rav Kook held his head and put his talis out of the sound, I think I remember the story correctly, over his head, and gave him a bracha. And he said he gave him a bracha for arichas yamim, and he attributed his ability to live such a long and productive life to the bracha that he got from Rav Kook. I remember once Rav Nata saying about Rav Kook, there were greater bikiyim in Balashim, there were greater bikiyim than Rav Kook, there were greater lamdanim, Slobodka, whatever it was, there were greater bikiyim than Rav Kook, greater lamdanim than Rav Kook, there were greater poskim than Rav Kook, there were greater mikubalim than Rav Kook, there were greater balei hashkafa than Rav Kook, there were greater tzaddikim than Rav Kook. But to have them all in the same person, there was no one greater than Rav Kook. That's something he once said. He had no kind of awareness of what it meant to dress yeshivish, so he always walked around very unassuming, and but always respectful, always dignified. He always insisted you do a get, you put on a jacket because you're sitting as a dayan, as a din atifa. He was always a very dignified person. And he's someone who I think that when he passed away this past Friday, we lost someone who was connected to a generation that we really don't have any connection to. We have no contact with. I'll just end with one last point, and that is that when I was, every time he would come to my house, the first thing, Shalom Aleichem, Rabbi Leibowitz, how are you? How are your family? He always called me Rabbi Leibowitz, whatever reason. How are you? How's your family? How is Rabbi Geffen, who is my wife's grandfather on one side, and how is Rabbi Tendler, my wife's grandfather, on the other side? That would be his first question. How are Rabbi Geffen, he knew from when he was a little boy, but when he was very young, when the Torah world was very small, there were people my wife's grandfather was a Chaim Berliner, and he once was just mentioned his name casually, and I kind of made that and we made that connection. But every time since then, how's Rabbi Geffen doing? How's Rabbi Tendler doing? He really cared about his old time friends and wanted to know how things are doing. Was always kind, was always polite, and was always a real gentleman. I have to stop because you have to go to Mincha, and maybe we'll have an opportunity to continue at a different point. Yehi Zichro Baruch.
Shekach, thank you, Rabbi.
Thank you. See you soon.